This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Could give for that, but I think that essentially one of the things that yoga does is it gives people a sense of connection to themselves. And I know that that's kind of like, what does that mean? I always think of it as that yoga brings people back to their sense of goodness. So I always say that yoga reveals people's essential goodness and supports them in living from a place of greatness. And I think that part of that is the mindfulness component of yoga. One of our teachers frequently says, when you bring awareness to your breath, you make better choices. And so I think that one of the things that yoga does really well, it helps with emotional regulation, it helps with impulse control. And why it does that is that it gives you the skills to kind of interrupt automatic pilot mode, that way of operating in the world in which we're just kind of like stuck in our patterns and our habits. Yoga gives you that pause, that break, and allows you time to like think through, is this really how I want to be operating in the world?
I've read that yoga helps develop empathy and that empathy contributes to reduction of self-harmful behaviors. Mm-hmm. How does improving empathy get people on a straighter path?
I can share a story with you. One of our students who is now a teacher for us, his name is Troy, and he was at Columbia River Correctional Institution. And what he had to say about that was yoga really provided for him this opportunity to experience self-compassion, right? And from that place of experience, self-compassion, realizing a broader connection to all beings everywhere. So in yoga philosophy, there is this belief that we all are one, and that to create harm to oneself or to create harm to anyone, there's no way of operating in the world that doesn't impact everything else, right? And so through this practice of mindfulness, of yoga, you experience that at deeper and deeper levels. And so what Troy had to say was that as he experienced that at greater levels, he just had this feeling, this overwhelming sense of how can I focus on my own selfish needs when I'm connected to everything else? And when he had that realization, he was less likely to create harm in the lives of other people. One of our other students, Crystal, talks about it. You know, yoga is a chance for me to give myself love. And when I give myself love, I'm able to radiate that love out to everybody else who crosses my path. We find that over and over again, that people who go through this practice, who do this practice, are more likely to bring forth goodness in the world.
The implication of what you're saying is that part of what motivates people to engage in hardcore narcotics or engage in crime is a lack of connection to themselves and the greater world?
Well, I think that there's a lot of reasons why people engage in criminal behaviors. Sometimes it's out of survival, out of necessity. Sometimes it's a matter of circumstance and situations. What I can say is that whatever landed people in the situations they're at, whether they're struggling with addiction or if they're incarcerated, what yoga can do is give them an opportunity to explore, what have I done? Why am I here? And is this what I want to continue to do? Or am I ready to make a change in the circumstances of my life? One of the other things that we frequently talk about is so many of our students have gotten to where they are in life because of people not showing up. And part of what the Living Yoga program does is we train volunteers to go into these institutions to show up, to bring care, to bring compassion, to bring positive role modeling to youth and adults who are in prison and alcohol and drug treatment centers. And that loving connection, that stranger who comes in to show that somebody cares about them, and that also we have classes out in the community when people are re-released, that it provides them access into the community support that is also caring so that people are re-entering into our community in a successful way.
It helps build trust.
Absolutely. Yeah. And faith and hope that people, even complete strangers, care about them.
You're listening to Radio Zine. I'm Ren Green, and I'm talking with Michael Faith, the executive director of Living Yoga, about their Yogathon. I was looking at the statistics at the Oregon Department of Corrections website. 50% of our inmates have mental health problems. Mm-hmm. 73% of them have some sort of substance abuse problem.
Right. And Living Yoga originally started as just work in the prisons. And those statistics exactly are the reason why we decided to expand our work into alcohol and drug treatment centers as well, to see if we could reach people before prison.
Head them off at the pass, right, before they make terrible life choices and completely, yeah, derail.
And I think that ultimately that's what this work is about, is supporting people and making positive life-affirming choices.
How many people does your program serve?
Because so many of the institutions we work with are so variant and they don't necessarily keep track in statistics of the comings and goings. Like some of our institutions, it's 30 days, some of them it's 90 days, and then other facilities like the prisons, the range of how many people at any given point varies. And so for us, it's a little bit hard to measure how many actual students go through our work because we work with several different institutions. But what we do keep track of is we have currently 19 classes in the community. And we have, I believe now, 10 partner sites that we work with. We estimate, again, it shifts and changes, but we estimate about 10,000 student hours of work each year.
And this has been for the past 12 years, 11 years?
Not that specific figure. So Living Yoga has been around for 15 years now, since 1998, and our programs have consistently grown over that period of time. So those 10,000 student hours are yearly at the current level of classes that we offer right now.
How would you respond to critics who think that substance abuse programs and prisons should be draconian, stripped down? It almost sounds like they're having a good time in,
right,
a yoga studio,
right,
in jail.
I think that the lens from which we see the world informs how we think of programs like this. If we view prison as punishment versus rehabilitation, then we will view programs like yoga as not having value. But if the purpose of correctional facilities is to rehabilitate people for successful reentry into our community, then we have to go with what we know works. And one of the things that we know works, because there's research to back it, are programs that help to create empathy, programs that help to create emotional regulation, programs that help to create impulse control, and also programs that help to instill a sense of self-worth, self-esteem, and connection to the broader community. And so yoga and mindfulness practices are practices that support all of those things. And if we look at it as 90% of the people in Oregon State prisons right now will at some point leave, what are we doing to make sure that they're successful in their reentry into our community? How do we support people in being our good neighbors upon release? And so for people who have kind of like the punishment model, I don't necessarily have an answer for that other than what are we doing to make sure that people are successful upon release? Because it's in all of our best interests to make sure that people have the skills they need to succeed in life. And then with drug and alcohol addiction, when we remember that addiction is, it's something that affects all of our lives. It affects all of our families.
The social costs are enormous.
Exactly. We have to examine and look at what are we doing, again, to take care of one another. Yoga's hard. Meditation and yoga are extremely difficult. And especially when you are struggling with addiction, to have that space, that self-examination, that time of introspection is extremely difficult, but also highly valuable. And that's the processes that begin to help people turn their lives around. There's a Buddhist teacher, Pema Chodron, who talks a lot about this. It's called Shempa, right? And Shempa is this like urge to do the same thing over and over again, even though we know it doesn't work. And she likens it to the experience of licking candy off a razor, right? So you see this like delicious candy, but it's on a razor. And it's like the urge to get that candy is so strong, even though you know it's going to cut your tongue, right? And so this practice brings people into that awareness of their shempa, of that seduction to do the same behavioral pattern, even when they know it doesn't work, and begins to work with them so that they can start to feel, what is it like to feel that urge, that seduction, and how do we breathe through it? Like, how do we learn to create a pause, a gap, some space between that urge to do that behavior and recognizing that we have free will, we have free choice, right? And so it goes back to that. When we bring awareness to our breath, when we bring awareness to our body, we remember that we have choice and we make better choices.
There are many different flavors and traditions of yoga. Do mm-hmm. you find that any one particular practice works especially well in these situations?
Many of the people that we work with have not been fully in their bodies for most of their lives. Many people have PTSD. Many people have had severe trauma, sexual abuse. So what we find works really well depends on the group. We train our teachers to meet people where they are, assume that they haven't done a lot of things in their body before, and to approach it more from a mindfulness perspective, very breath-centered, very, I wouldn't say gentle necessarily, because there's definitely times of more intensity, but definitely meeting people where they are, approaching it oftentimes as if people are beginners, focusing more on kind of the philosophy, the meditation, the mindfulness, the breathing, and the asanas are that the physical postures are kind of tools to explore how to breathe more deeply, how to engage the mindfulness more fully.
So just yoga itself helps build psychological and emotional resilience, and it's not necessarily about the pose in particular, it's just about getting into it.
From the way that we encourage our teachers to bring yoga to people, it's not necessarily about the poses. I mean, yes, the poses themselves bring strength. They support people in all the physical benefits. There's so much good research out there about the positive physical benefits of yoga practice. But really, our deepest intention is, again, I just go to the wisdom of our teachers, right? So like one of our teachers, Anna, she talks a lot about how her biggest intention in any given class is giving people an experience of being able to change how they feel and to experience success. And I would say that the same is true for so many of our teachers, is to give people an experience of being able to change how they feel, to experience being in their bodies in a healthy and healthful way, and to also have the sense of support of community. So many of the people in the institutions we work with are always on guard, always in a state of stress. And so this hour where we come into their institution is their sanctuary. Right? And it's their one chance to maybe let down their guard. It's their one chance to experience a moment of repose and peace and to have a sense of empowerment and to experience their bodies in new, fresh, fun, maybe even surprising ways.
Yogathon is going to be wrapping up at the end of this week. What do you have planned for your June 1st closing ceremony?
So our closing celebration is going to be a huge welcoming to all the people who participated in the event. We're going to have a class to live music with local teachers Chris Calarco and Uma Hulit, and we're going to be offering prizes to the top fundraisers and to the top teams, and just having one big celebration. So it's going to be from 9 until 1 p.m. at the EcoTrust building in the Pearl. That's on June 1st. And if anybody wants to find out more information about it, they can visit our website at living-yoga.org.
How can listeners contribute at this point, since your event's almost over?
Beyond even this event, we always have opportunities for people to contribute to our work. One of the most powerful ways, of course, is financial support. We have a monthly giving program called Roots, and it's the way that anybody can support our programs for even as little as $15 a month, which is about the same as a typical drop-in yoga class. Other ways are to volunteer in our office, and we also always can use volunteers for our events. And if people are interested in becoming a volunteer teacher of ours, we do 2 teacher trainings a year, and the next one would be in January that there's openings for.
Well, Michael, thank you very much for coming in and talking to me today.
Yeah, it was great. Thank you so much for having me here.
I'm Ren Green, this is Radio Zine, and I've been talking with Michael Faith of Living Yoga about the Yogathon that's running in Portland until June 1st.
From KBOO News, these are your noon headlines. I'm Jimmy Tardy. The British High Court has ruled that the British Ministry of Defense must conduct coroner's inquiries into the deaths of more than 160 Iraqi civilians. The court went on to say that the inquests must be, quote, full, fair, and fearless, and accessible to the victims' families and to the public. The first 11 investigations will involve Iraqi civilians who died while in British military custody. According to the court, the examination of the circumstances of death are British responsibilities under Articles 2 and 3 of the European Convention on Human Rights, of which the UK is a signatory. Russian gay rights activists remained defiant on Saturday after they were denied a permit to rally in support of human rights in Russia in front of the Duma, Russia's lower house of parliament. At least 30 activists were detained. The rally comes with a resurgence of anti-gay legislation in at least 10 of Russia's legislative regions. The government of Colombia and the insurgent group FARC have announced that they are making progress on peace talks. A statement released in Havana, Cuba on Sunday stated that both sides have agreed to significant land reform policies, part of a six-point framework that will encompass peace talks. The, quote, integrated rural reform agreement includes a land fund through which displaced peoples and others without land will be given millions of acres of illegally or underused land. The land bank is known as the, quote, Land Fund for Peace, and will offer loans, technical assistance, marketing advice, and legal and police protection. Tens of thousands of people held a rally in the capital of Malaysia on Saturday to protest what they call voting fraud by the incumbent government of Malaysia. A coalition of three opposition groups charges that the ruling Barisia Nasional, or National Front, government engaged in tinkering of election districts in order to win a majority in parliament, while only gaining less than 47% of the popular vote. A handful of opposition figures have previously been detained under the Sedition Act for criticizing the government, while opposition newspapers have also been seized by the government. For KBOO News, I'm Jimmy Tardy. This is KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Aladdin Theater, presenting singer-songwriter James McMurtry Wednesday, June 19th at 8 p.m. Tickets and information for James McMurtry on June 19th at the Aladdin box office or at aladdin-theater.com.
Howdy, everybody. I'm Rose Maddox, and I'd like to tell you that you're listening to KBOO in Portland, Oregon, the station that I listen to when I'm in the area.
Stand by for the noontime jamboree.
Come on, come on, come on, come on.
Just got the news, and if I don't blow a fuse, I'm gonna be associating with the aggravating blues, and now my spirit's getting lower than the floor of the deep blue sea. I got a rainy day feeling, cause my sunshine's leaving me. She left me a note, and here's the words that she wrote. You done and trampled on your mama, and it's getting my goat, and now I'm loaded down with trouble and a double dose of misery. I got a rainy day feeling, cause my sunshine's leaving me. I'll moan, but you can leave me alone, cause that's the only way I know to show I want her back home. So when she hears about my tears, I hope she shows a little sympathy. I got a rainy day feeling, cause my sunshine's leaving me. The deal has been made, and now the cards has been played. The card I needed was a diamond, but I must have got a spade. And even though, of course, I know that she is not the only fish in the sea, I got a rainy day feeling, cause my sunshine's leaving me. Just got the news, and if I don't blow a fuse, I'm gonna be associating with the aggravating blues, and now my spirit's getting lower than the floor of the deep blue sea. I got a rainy day feeling, cause my sunshine's leaving me.
¶¶ gently rocks my baby cradle with the tender care and love. Mother dear, yes, darling mother, it would ease this awful pain if you'd sing while I am sleeping. Rock my cradle. Neath the palms tonight he's sleeping on an island far away. Oh, the years has so much sorrow. I still recall his words today. There's a gently rocks my baby cradle with the tender